Welcome to the How To Dressage podcast and a very different episode. So usually when we create these podcast episodes, it's just me sat in front of a microphone reading one of our latest articles, which is available on our website, howtodressage.com. We're basically turning our written content into audio content, and that helps in a few ways. Firstly, not everybody is visiting the website and not everybody wants to read dressage articles. Some people learn better by listening, so therefore they prefer the podcast. Now, every time we create a podcast episode, we also embed that episode onto the post that it matches on the website. And this means that when we get people who visit the website who, again, don't want to read or who are possibly visually impaired, it just makes it easier for them to digest our content. So it helps make us a little bit more inclusive. However, there are a couple of things that I want to address and that I want to talk to you about, but that aren't really going to make good articles for the website. However, I am able to just kind of sit here and freestyle talk to you about it. So the content that I'm about to share with you now isn't available on the website. It's not planned. I have a couple of notes, but I don't really have an article in front of me that I am reading from. It's totally freestyle. So please bear with me if this isn't as smooth as what you're usually used to when you listen to the How To Dressage podcast. But in total, I've got three things that I want to talk about. So the best place to start is obviously with number one. And the first one is possibly the most frequent email or the most frequent question that we get asked. And that is, what is the best exercise for, and you can insert pretty much any word you want here. So what is the best exercise for suppleness? What is the best exercise to improve the contact? What's the best exercise to improve my horse's paces or to improve my horse's balance or to get my horse off the forehand? Everyone's kind of looking for that kind of magic bullet that if they ride this exercise, then their horse's way of going will improve or a problem that they're having will suddenly stop if they ride this one magic exercise. Now, unfortunately, there isn't a magic exercise as such. However, there are three tools that if you ride them frequently and if you ride them correctly, they will basically improve every single aspect of your horse's way of going. Now, this is going to be a little bit anticlimactic because it's no real big news, because those three tools are basically transitions, circles, and lateral work. Now, obviously, in the very early days of your horse's training, you're probably not going to be doing much lateral work, but you can, of course, ride transitions and ride circles and combine them together. You can ride transitions on circles. And then as you and your horse start to improve, you can then start to introduce lateral work. I would say that one of the biggest problems when it comes to training is that everybody gets stuck going around the outside track in the same pace and in the same tempo. They may occasionally throw in a 20-meter circle before they change the rein and then do the exact same thing on the other rein. For most people, if they want to improve their horse's suppleness, their contact, the paces, the balance, etc., they need to ride more transitions and more circles, and eventually more lateral work. So when it comes to transitions, think of all the different types of transitions that you can ride that is suitable for your horse's current level of training. For example, if you've got a novice horse, you're not going to be training transitions going from canter to halt. But you can do transitions such as trot, walk, trot, or you could also go from trot, halt to trot, or even canter, trot, canter. You could do that quite quickly in succession, as well as your usual transitions such as walk to trot, trot to canter, canter to trot, trot to walk, etc. And to add even more variety, you could look at riding those transitions in different places. For example, you don't have to just ride them on the outside track. You could ride them on the inside track on the quarter line, on the centre line, on the diagonal line. You could ride them on a circle. You could ride them on the short side of the arena. All these different places. Challenge your horse just a little bit to help encourage him to step further underneath with his hind legs, therefore helping to improve the balance and the overall way of going. This will also help to keep your horse more attentive to your aids, because he won't be falling asleep going around the outside of the arena. You'll be giving him plenty of to do with all these different changes of transitions. And then again, when it comes to circles, again, you're not going to be riding your horse on a small 8 meter circle if you've got a novice horse. You're going to be riding on big circles. But again, ride them in different places of the arena. So even if you're only riding 20 and 15 meter circles, you don't have to ride them just at A and just at C. You could ride them at B, at E, you could ride them around X. You could do the transitions on the circles, such as trot, walk, trot, or canter, trot, canter. You could trot around the circle, halt, and then go off into trot again. So every time somebody asks me what's the best exercise for suppleness, contact, paces, balance, get my horse off the forehand, it kind of comes a little bit anticlimactic because I don't have that magic bullet. But just know that if there's anything that you want to improve in dressage, more than likely it can be improved by transitions and circles, and when you get more advanced, by lateral work. And lateral work doesn't have to be scary. It's not a case of doing canter half passes all the time. You can get a benefit out of doing lateral work just by doing more simple exercises such as leg yielding, shoulder four, shoulder in, walk pirouettes, and possibly even travers. Again, these can be ridden at all different places in the arena and also on circles. And if you need any help with the lateral work, you should know by now that we have probably created an article on it along with a podcast episode. So just search with how to, and then whatever the exercise is, and you'll find content on it. Now, if you're not quite sure on what to introduce to your horse first or what order you should teach lateral work in, then again, we have a podcast episode and an article on that. Just search for, I think it's called something like how to introduce lateral work and in what order. It goes through all the different exercises, how to introduce them, when to introduce them to set you up for success with your horse. But next time that you are having a problem, or even if you're not having a problem, even if you're just in a normal training session, just know that if you want to improve your horse's way of going for dressage, your three tools are transitions, circles, and lateral work. Right, now moving on to the second thing that I want to talk about, and this is a little bit more difficult for me to explain. And this is when we mention issues within our articles and within our podcast, when we talk about issues within your horse's way of going that we are trying to correct, such as things such as the horse is on the forehand, or the horse is coming behind the contact, or is coming behind the vertical, or the horse's hind legs are trailing, just know that we're not blaming the horse. A lot of people seem to think, and we have had people shout us out on Facebook about this, that when we kind of raise these issues, that we're blaming the horse as though it's the horse's fault, or they are evading, or the horse has been naughty. And that is why this issue is. So it's not down to the rider, it's just the fact that they have an uncooperative horse. Now, basically that isn't what we're trying to say at all. What we try to do is when we try to issue a fault, or when we look at common faults in something, so say you're trying to do an exercise, we will list all the common faults that can go wrong with that type of exercise. So if we look at the horse's quarters coming in, maybe the exercise that you're trying to do is just too much for the horse's current level of capabilities, and therefore he has to find a way to balance himself or to kind of not take the weight behind because he physically isn't strong enough to do it. It can also highlight a pain issue. So if the horse is unable to take the weight behind, he may step to one side to evade. It can also be a rider issue. Maybe the rider didn't apply the aids correctly. Maybe the outside leg didn't go behind the girth to secure the quarters, therefore the quarters swung out or swung in. Or maybe they put too much pressure on one side of the horse and therefore unbalanced him and caused him to step out and become crooked. There's lots of reasons why this would happen. And obviously, if we listed every single detail in a blog post or on a podcast episode, they would be 100 times as long because everything in dressage is interlinked. Again, it could be something as simple as the rider wasn't sat central. Maybe the rider's weight shifted. Again, that caused the horse to step out. So this isn't a case of us blaming the horse for that issue. It's just saying that is a common fault. You may see it happen, so be vigilant to it. And if it does happen, then it's your job as the rider to assess, okay, why did that happen? Was it something that the rider did? Is it something, is it a training issue, the fact that the horse isn't quite capable yet? Could be that the horse is capable but didn't quite understand the aids correctly. It's your job to kind of figure that out. We try and give you as much information as possible, but we can't see you and your horse. And if there is that fault, there could be many reasons why that could happen. So just know that when we are listing common faults and we are saying things such as your horse is on the forehand or the horse comes behind the contact, we're never blaming the horse. After all, the horse can only do first what he is physically capable of doing, and then secondly, what he thinks we are asking him to do. So, you know, they don't speak English. We're well aware of that. It would be so much easier if they did, but they don't. And the only things that we have got to communicate with him with is our legs, our seat, our weight, and our rein aids. And as you can imagine, we're trying to teach our horses to do all these different movements, not just walk, trot, canter, but go sideways and pirouette and trot on the spot and all these fantastic movements through different combinations of these aids. And you can see how complicated that can become, how confusing it can become to the horse. And if the horse literally doesn't understand what is required of him, then you are going to get faults that appear. But that's not necessarily the horse's fault. It just means that we need to look at the training, readdress what's going on. Is it something that we are creating? Did the horse just not understand? Do we need to go back a step, etc.? But we're never blaming the horse. We understand that the horse can only do what he is physically capable of doing, and also what he thinks we are asking of him. Okay, so moving on. The third and final thing that I want to talk to you about relates to competition riding. And it relates specifically to the judges' comments that you get on your dressage score sheets. So I know that if a judge gives you a score of less than 7 for a movement in a dressage test, they are encouraged, they don't have to, but they are encouraged to leave you a comment to explain why you lost the marks for that movement or why it wasn't scored as a 7. Now, these comments are things such as lost balance, too much neck bend, on the forehand, unsteady in the contact, etc. I'm sure you've all seen comments such as this on dressage test sheets at one point or another. Now, when it comes to these comments, what I want you to think of is that the judge is there to identify the symptoms. They're not there to give you the cause. Okay, that sounds really confusing. Okay, what do I mean by that? So what I want you to think of is if you got the vet out to come and see your horse, and say there was something not quite wrong with your horse, and the vet came to have a look at him, and asked you to trot him up in a straight line. So you trotted the horse up and the vet would say, okay, he's lame in his front left foreleg. Okay, that is a symptom. So we are looking at the horse, we can see that he's lame, but we don't know why he's lame. And why he's lame is the cause. So there could be many reasons why the horse could be lame in his front left foreleg. So it could be something to do with his shoulder, it could be his tendon, it could be something in his hoof, he could just have a stone in his shoe. You don't know. And this is where you inspect, and this is where the vet would then come and have a look at the horse's leg and try to find out, okay, what is causing the symptom of lameness. Okay, so how does this relate to our judge's comments? Well, the judge is kind of like the vet from the first initial viewing. So the judge is only seeing you and your horse for about 5 or 6 minutes or so. They don't know anything about your history. They don't know anything about your horse's history. They've probably never seen you before. And they're literally assessing what they see in front of them. So if the horse loses balance or, you know, comes on the forehand or is unsteady in the contact, they are symptoms. That is basically what the judge is seeing. So they tell the writer to write these comments down because that is what they observed. Those are the symptoms and the problems in the dressage performance that they witnessed. And those are the reasons why scores were lost. However, that doesn't tell you what the cause is. So if you got a comment such as unsteady contact, that might not have anything to do with your hands, with the horse's bit. It doesn't necessarily mean you've got to go change your horse's bit. There could be loads of reasons why your horse was unsteady in the contact. And the judge's job isn't there to tell you the causes, because the judge would have to get out of the judge's box, would have to come and talk to you, would have to possibly look inside the horse's mouth, would have to do some exercises with you, try to encourage a more steady contact. And obviously that's not the judge's job. That is the job of your trainer. So when you finish a dressage test and you get your score sheet, you have all these symptoms, all these problems within the dressage performance of where you lost marks. They're not there to be disheartening. It's the judge just identifying ways in which you can improve their performance to get higher marks the next time. Ideally, in an ideal world, what you should do is then take that to your trainer. And this is where the diagnostic side then starts. So just like the vet would come over, look at the horse's front left leg and try to assess why is this problem happening, and then go about a course of treatment on how to correct it. This is then what happens with your trainer. So they might get a comment such as unsteady in the contact. Well, as a horse owner, you will know, well, I know my horse's teeth are okay. They've just been done or they've just been seen, so there's no issues in his teeth. You can physically check his mouth to make sure that he's happy with the bit. Maybe you've had a bit fitting done, so you know that the bit fits him properly. Maybe he's just working a little bit behind the leg. You need to push him forward a little bit more to create a more steady contact. So it might actually not be a bit issue. It might not be a hand issue. It might be an impulsion issue. It might also be a suppleness issue. If your horse is a bit tight or isn't quite as supple through his back, then the contact is going to be unsteady. Again, that's really got nothing to do with the horse's bit, the horse's mouth, or your hands. It's to do with the rest of the horse's body and how it all comes together in the energy circle that we've talked about a few times now. But regardless of this, the point that I'm trying to make is that what you get on a dressage test sheet is the symptoms. It's your job to then go away and investigate, hopefully with a good qualified trainer, of what are the causes of these. So if the horse lost his balance, why was that? Maybe you lost your balance in the saddle and that caused your horse to lose his balance. Obviously, that's a very simple fix because you know why it was. But you need to take that sheet away and identify what the causes are. What we sometimes see is that the rider doesn't really do any investigation as to what causes the symptoms. Instead, they try and basically stick a band-aid on it. So an example would be if we use the same analogy that we were using before about an unsteady contact, the rider then goes away, comes back into the dressage test again later and was like, okay, because I got that comment of unsteady contact, I'm going to shorten my reins a lot and really keep hold of my horse's head so that his head remains still. So his head isn't moving as much and therefore the contact looks to be more steady. Now, this isn't really addressing the symptom at all. It is just putting a plaster over it, which, especially in this scenario, can cause a lot more problems. So where am I going with this? My whole point of this section of what I wanted to talk to you about is that when you get your dressage score sheets, firstly, don't be upset if you've got loads of kind of negative comments. The judge is encouraged to tell you where you lost the marks if they score you less than a 7. So it can look like there's loads of things wrong with your performance when really it's not really that bad. At the end of the day, you will get more value from that type of score sheet than one that tells you that you did everything perfect. If you did everything perfect, then it kind of gives you nothing to work on and nothing to continue learning or nothing to continue progressing with. A score sheet with more comments on of things that were not quite perfect will give you a lot more to work on at home and will ultimately hopefully help you to progress quicker and improve your performance. So don't get too disheartened about that. The second point was that the judge is just listing symptoms. You have to go away and work with a trainer to find the underlying cause of the problems. Just think of that analogy with the vet. The vet could turn around and say the horse is lame in the front left leg, but there could be loads of reasons why the horse could be lame. Could be relating to the shoulder, the upper leg, the lower leg, the hoof. Loads of different reasons why it could be lame. So if the judge said the horse lost his balance or was behind the vertical or was unsteady in the contact, as the example we've just used, there could be lots of causes for that. You need to go away and to look at them and find the solution. And more than likely, it's not going to be an easy fix. It's going to be something that you're going to have to work on improving over a series of sessions. Again, to connect this whole podcast into one big circle, look at your three tools of transitions, circles, and lateral work. More than likely, whatever issue you were facing, it can be corrected with those transitions, circles, and lateral work. And of course, I can't do a dressage podcast without mentioning the scales of training. So make sure that you are ticking off those boxes of rhythm, suppleness, contact, impulsion, straightness, and collection. You are looking at them in the right order to help you find what the causes are and to create solutions to improve your dressage performance. So I would like to thank you very much for listening to me rambling on this podcast episode. I'm not quite sure if it's been any value to you or not, but I did want to just kind of talk to you about these things. As mentioned, this has been completely unplanned, hence why I've been left rambling a little bit. The next episode will go back to our usual format of the articles. But thank you very much for listening to this episode. And of course, if you want to stay in touch with How To Dressage, please don't forget to like and follow us on our other social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and Pinterest. We truly appreciate you for taking the time to listen to our podcast, and we hope that you got a lot from it. For more, don't forget to check out our articles and other free stuff, which is available on our website, howtodressage.com, and pop by Amazon for our range of dressage books, planners, and diaries to help you stay on track with your competitions and training. Bye for now.